Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Peter's joining me again. Thank you, Peter.
Hey, Daniel.
Nice to have you as always. Nice so last time we talked about many things. We talked about the dying culture. We talked about a lack of communication, the conditioned response to the social media responses and platforms and confirmation bias. We talked about the hatred that exists between the parties and the dehumanization of other groups within our collective societal structures, let alone our world, right? And as we ended that episode, I know you and I both had a similar thought. Yours, I believe, was why don't you just take over here and explain that?
So I think what we are going through is the same playbook that Eastern Europe went through in the Soviet times, right? So not just Russia, but, you know, Romania, Czechoslovakia, et cetera, right? All of Balkans East going into Russia.
Right.
They were taken over by this alien Soviet mindset that was not part of their culture at all in any of these countries. They had very traditional, recognizable cultures. And as we were talking, I, you know, saw one story recently about what was going on in the Romanian prisons, both for political dissidents and religious observers that were targets of the regime. You know, it's just absolutely horrible where these men and women would be imprisoned for years, you know, 15, 20, 25 years, tortured routinely to break their spirit to the point where they would have, their compatriots that were killed and then thrown in the river to be consumed by the local wildlife as all their friends watched from behind bars as to what happened, right? This was a way to break the culture, to attempt to break the culture and to attempt to destroy all common decency, their history, their religion, whatever it was going to be, and replace it with an artificial anti-human, essentially atheist theology of control, dominance, violence, hatred. And they followed the same old playbook of divide, conquer, deprive one, reward another, you know, on and on it goes. Yeah. We haven't, fortunately, in at least America, hit that point yet, but look at some of the rhetoric that's, you know, goes around from, you know, the supposed educated elite when they start talking about, well, you know, we got to kill this, we got to kill that, we got to have this war, we got to, you know, so on. We're a very short step from going down a very dark, bloody path. And I think we all collectively need to be on guard against it.
And I talked in the last episode about that a little bit. Not that specifically, I want to be clear. My fear of the degradation and the potential for revolutionary style behavior or acts within this country, in the Western world generally. So
the dehumanization of
exactly,
you know, our neighbor.
Exactly. We are not any different than the Nazis were in the sense that they are human beings. We're not any different than the Russians and the Soviet Union that were human beings, which means that we have the potential to end up in the same way. And the more that we believe we don't have the potential, the more likely it is to happen.
Yeah. It's easy to believe the lies that, no, I'm different. No, we're all the same. We're right. All capable of falling to the same foibles, to believing the same lies, to making the same mistakes, as history has so painfully demonstrated. But how unsurprising that history is not a prime focus of education at any level, right? There are just forces. There aren't events. There aren't people, right?
Yeah. It's diminished further because it's like history is written by who won, you know? Right. And it's like, yeah. Well, if that's the mindset, then we're starting 100 foot behind the start line. You know?
Again, the moral relativism that we spoke about previously, right?
Yes. I read a scientific paper yesterday, and I'm just going to highlight it real quick. So it's called The Dark Side of Environmental Activism, and it's on sciencedirect.com. You can check it out if you guys have a subscription. Basically, the gist of it is that the report shows a positive association between environmental activism and Machiavellianism and narcissism specifically. Yep. So think about that. It's like, I want to go out and change the world and I have to do it. Great. But what's your motivation?
Yeah.
Right. And this, and I'm using the environmentalist. So the report was done on the environmentalist. What's the difference between the environmentalist and our ultra left people who want to go off and change society into their image and such that we're all hanging out with, you know, unicorns and living the big friendly lie.
Right.
You know, not much.
No.
But
what do they have in common? Well, all of it, right? The, mm-hmm. the human is not at the core of it all. It's something else.
Exactly.
You know, this nebulous concept of the environment. It's this nebulous concept of isms, whatever those might be, right?
Exactly.
It's always something other than the guy or gal sitting in front of you who's listening to you spew whatever nonsense you're spewing, right?
That's perfect. It's absolutely perfect because, so to me, that just was a light bulb moment. By focusing on something else, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't care about other things. Don't get me wrong.
No.
But by putting all of the emphasis on something else is such that we can dehumanize other people, that they are below that ideological doctrine or whatever it may be in this case, right?
Yeah.
It could be environmentalism. It could be Marxism. It could be fascism, whatever it is. And we shouldn't ignore the potential for fascism either. You know, on one side, we have a tendency for Marxist ideology to take over. Like it did in post-World War II. And we also have the inclination for fascism, which did take over and lead to World War II.
Right.
So, and again, one is kind of the response to the other. If we go back to the kind of the whole body problem, and we can't be naive about that.
But and what do they share? Right. It's all the dehumanization.
Yes.
And the removal of the human being at the core of it. That example I gave about seeing the people who went through a Romanian prison, right? They were never referred to as humans. They were never referred to as men or women. They always were called criminals and bandits, right?
Yep.
So, you know, you are not a person. You are a thing. You are an idea that is, you know, unacceptable to the current regime. And it's funny because, you know, so many of the old Twilight Zone episodes, you know, that were written specifically by Rod Serling, this is something he was concerned about because he was writing from his experience during, you know, World War II and all that. I think they're as relevant today as they were when, you know, they first aired, you know, whatever it was now, 50 years ago, 60 years ago when that was on. I think, again, referencing what we're talking about, the human condition is constant. And the things that affect it are constant, regardless of time or place.
Absolutely. And that should never be overlooked or underestimated.
Yeah.
This is not the only time. The time period in which Peter is describing this right now in Romania, this was happening all over the world, has happened all over the world, still happens all over the world.
Khmer Rouge, you know, Viet Cong, right? Two different countries, two different setups, same problem. And what was it? Dehumanize, right? Minimize somebody for being other.
100%. When I was doing research on the fascist kind of precursors, if you will, when we look at cultures who have gone that route within the past 100 years or so, all of them had these 5-6 things in problem. One was economic hardship.
Yeah, two, as the impetus to give them
exactly,
the first place.
Exactly. Power, yeah. Yes. Second would be political instability. So there's enough instability there that the strong man can can grab hold and run, you know?
Yeah, the stagnancy that we talked about, right?
Exactly. General social unrest, which we talked about in the last episode as well. National decline. Cultural conflicts, so infighting between subgroups or cultures within a society.
Right, yep.
Plenty of propaganda and disinformation, yep, which we are getting by the water hose, fire hose right now. And populist mobilizations. So I think that the populist mobilization would be charismatic leadership and mass mobilization and rhetoric that's against the elite and probably anti-democratic, right, certainly.
Yeah.
So, and the problem that we have in our country right now, as far as I can tell, okay, and I'm but one person, but I see that happening to an extent on one side of our country. And on the other side, I see the postmodernistic Marxist leanings, elitist leanings.
Yeah.
And I think they're almost like the formulated reaction to each other.
Yeah.
You know, like the opposing forces, you know, and we're not setting ourselves up for success. And I think we need to wake up pretty quick.
Yeah. Agreed. Because nobody in any of these cultures that we talked about historically saw what was coming, right? I mean, Imperial Russia knew that they had, you know, social problems that the Tsars were trying to address. Any place else that went through it, yeah, people knew, but they all took a complacent attitude, I think, where it was like, yeah, we've always had these problems. We'll work on it. We'll figure it out. Okay. But talking about it and doing something about it are worlds apart, and the civilizations that went by the wayside did not bridge the two extremes to actually have action come out of it that was constructive to their societies.
So you have to understand why that might happen.
Yeah.
One, it's difficult.
Completely.
It's hard to identify the problem.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and I don't mean like the problem, like, yeah, we can observe that we have misinformation and disinformation, that we have cultural conflicts and issues, that we have some degree of economic hardship, that we have political instability, and at times a lot of social unrest, depending on which border situation you're paying attention to. So it's, I mean, what else do we need right now? We see the symptoms.
Yeah.
Right. But we don't, what we're not finding yet is the answer.
Right.
And if it were easy, I suppose anybody would do it. Right. But that's why I want to have these conversations. And it's, you know, you and I have these conversations, and I'm willing to have these conversations with anybody that I think can help us answer the question. To me, it comes back to what we talked about last time. It's about reconciling the past culture with the present.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But we have to be able to talk to each other. We talked about that last time. We have to stop lying to ourselves.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing.
I think that's point one. Right. So how do we awaken the mind of the average person is such that we stop believing the propaganda that is being thrown in front of us, that's confirming what we want to believe.
Yeah.
And that's the key, what we want to believe.
Right. And not to stop trying to find somebody to blame.
Exactly.
And just understand that there's, you know, there's always thesis, antithesis, and then synthesis. So no side ever should get everything that they want. Everybody should feel pain to the point where it's like, all right, sucks, but I can live with it. You know, this will work, and okay, we'll try and make it better down the line. That isn't happening because the, you know, malicious actors behind the scenes want to keep everybody segregated at their each other's throats to fight over scraps while, you know, they make their getaway with everything else.
I want to come back to that in a moment.
Yeah.
I want to highlight something that's, I think, very important. So thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. So that means we have an idea. we discover the ends and bounds of that idea, that we compare the complete opposite of that idea. And through that comparison and understanding, we can synthesize new ways of being. Right? Am I interpreting you correctly?
Yeah. Okay. The classic rhetoric dialogue that is never taught anymore. Yes. Right?
Perfect.
Argument, counter-argument, resolution.
New understanding.
Yeah.
The other thing that you touched on there, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, is the responsibility. Mm-hmm. So if we say we can't be, first of all, if you're not sure about this and you're naive to this or whatever it may be, I've never been overly politically motivated, but I've been the type to speak up when I see something that needs speaking up about, for sure. And I think I'm at that moment right now. You know, like the more that I've attuned myself to the happenings of social structures and economic flows and massive amounts of disinformation, and really started to reflect on this over the past few months. You know, the one thing that comes to mind is that we're all believing the lies that are being told to us to some degree.
I think so.
And we have to accept the responsibility that it is our individual responsibilities to bear, as such that anything would be made better. No one can make it better for us. We have to make it better for ourselves.
And this is an important point. Everybody's at fault at this point, right? We've all been too entrenched for too long in whatever our various positions might be. Like we've spoken about so many times, if you don't start talking to other people, you lost. And again, that reticence is something that's being exploited by people who do not have our best interests at heart.
This is true for Western culture generally in the current state. You talked about it in the last episode. This is happening in Germany, in the United Kingdom, in France, Poland, other countries in Western Europe. It's happening in the United States. It's happening in Canada, certainly. It's happening in Ghana, in Africa, even.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I had a talk with a friend of mine who's originally from Ghana a few days ago, and he had gone back there in the fall for the first time in many years. And I asked him point blank, I said, how has it changed from the last time you were there? And he said, a lot has changed. Information is freely available. You know, economic development is booming. There's a lot of great things happening. However, then I asked him another point blank question. I said, do you think it's better now than it was when you left?
Yeah.
And he said, no.
Yeah. And materially, I said, yes. Culturally, no, right?
Exactly. I said, please explain that. And he said, well, culturally, everybody's stuck in their phone. We're separated from each other. So you're getting all the lies, misinformation, propaganda. And he's like, oh yeah. Well, like so bad.
Yeah.
Right. So what does that tell us? That the threat, it doesn't matter where you are in the world.
Yeah.
In so much as you're getting the same information, or the same parties have the similar formula, different parties have the same formula, I should say, of control.
Yeah. It's the same playbook. They just put a different cover on it. Right.
Right. Instead of the USSR logo, now it's the, you know, it's the,
whatever.
It's the 2024 edition. Right.
Right. Right.
Special for Ghana.
Yeah. And, you know, when you think about it, I mean, Ghana, it's a pretty traditional culture, right?
Correct.
So for, you know, some place like that to be going through, man, that means everybody's going through it. So this is a human problem.
That's exactly it. This isn't a United States problem. This is a human being problem.
Right.
And it's a cultural problem. So human beings in society and culture together in the state that we've created, right? Without any – I'm not the type of person to want to go off and overregulate everything in the world. I believe that people are quite capable of doing things generally very, very well.
Yeah.
And given the right motivation, they will. Given the opportunity, they will. I believe that. I've seen that. However, you know, I think that at some point we need to do something about the handful of people that will take that and use it to harm many others. right? Yeah. And subversively or otherwise. So we can't be ignorant to that, you know? I wonder how might we go about... So, I mean, before I even ask the question, let me just summarize here. So we've talked about two separate sides of the equation. We've talked about the Marxist postmodernist leanings. We talked about the fascist leanings. We've talked about some of the root causes and the analysis and things that we can measure. We've talked about the fact that human nature is prevalent no matter what country you're in. We're still human beings. And by losing the common thread of humanity and allowing ourselves to have hatred for the other individual or being, to dehumanize them, that we cause problems, that when we lie to ourselves about what's going on around us and not pay attention to what's actually going on around us, and I mean actually what's going on around us, not the border crisis, but what's actually happening, like what's that detracting everybody from, for example?
Right. Yep, precisely.
Right. I mean, without us individually accepting the responsibility to go out and make a change, you know? I'm not a huge JFK fan, other otherwise, but I think he said it best. It's not what you can, not what your country can do for you. It's what you can do for your country.
Yeah.
It's bearing the responsibility, and collectively that will make it the better place. It's always resonated with me.
Yeah. Because what was he really talking about? It wasn't blind patriotism, right? It was about strengthening the society.
Correct.
And, you know, especially at that point, you know, America would definitely had some major, major fractures. So, then the difference versus now was that people were still working off a common lexicon for what they thought we should be addressing. And we had a more or less broad agreement on what the American culture should look like at that time. Not surprising that went all by the wayside, you know, after his assassination, right? Because a lot of the decline, I think, really began right around, you know, the year I was born, right? So, you know, early 70s, that's when things really started to come apart socially, I think.
So, and you think about that back in the World War II era, we had a common thread. We had a common enemy. We had an existential crisis. So all those things allowed easier unification. We come out of that. It's kind of the golden era where we're manufacturing all kinds of things. We have opportunity, but the opportunity is beyond manufacturing. Manufacturing was like, that was the thing of the day. It allowed us to begin mass producing stuff and gave jobs and great opportunity to a lot of people. Right.
In hindsight, I think we overly focus on it, right? Because why was manufacturing such a powerhouse, you know, at that point in the 50s going into the early 60s? Because the rest of the world was blown up and still recovering from World War II. But by the mid 60s, industry globally had recovered. So, you know, this whole fixation that we had on manufacturing being the key to middle class wealth was true, but it was changing. And nobody at the time realized that, I don't think. But then I think even now, most people are kind of oblivious to the particular circumstances for that 15, 20-year window that allowed things to be the way they were in this country.
Exactly. And we were profiting off rebuilding and economic development in many other countries and flows and establishing huge networks, especially after further, like, the Korean War.
Right.
In the Vietnam era, right? So more so the Korean War, because we went in and definitely helped develop Seoul.
South Korea.
In South Korea. And it's and you can tell. I used to live there. You can tell that there's heavy Western influence there, and that's why. It's also a bastion of democracy, I suppose, in a part of the world where there isn't much of that. Right. And how did that happen?
Yeah.
Right. It wasn't an accident, and the people still seem to want it. So that's always good.
Right.
I think that there's something else though. There's something, it seems like, I mean, it's one thing to say, pay attention. It's another thing to say, no, we can't continue to lie to ourselves about what's actually happening. It's another thing to say, accept responsibility. Right. I mean, yeah, all those things matter, but to what end, you know? It's like, I'm going to wake up in the morning and do that. Okay. What's that going to give me? Yeah. You know, it, and I'm not being callous. I'm being genuine, right? I think we have to be going in a certain direction, right? So I figure the first thing that we should do then is we should try to catch ourselves when any time that we're dehumanizing anybody else.
Yeah.
We ought to stop and wonder why.
Yeah. And you recognize that you're acting out programming.
Yes. Yeah. I think, and I'm genuinely reflecting on this right now, as you can probably tell.
Yeah.
It doesn't, I mean, if we try to gate ourselves in that way, right? Let's just walk through that. And to your point, we're not, if we do that, we're not acting out programming. It's not a conditioned response anymore.
Yeah.
We're divergent from a particular group leaning, right? I mean, I could say any number of things. I mean, you can look in Ukraine right now, right? Like,
yeah.
Is it okay for Russia to invade Ukraine?
Yeah.
You know? No. And what did the Russians do to justify it? They dehumanized them. They dehumanized the Ukrainians. Right?
The standard playbook, right?
It's the exact standard playbook. And, yeah. You know, Vladimir knows it pretty well.
Yeah.
He came out of it and ran it for many years.
He wrote the playbook.
I was going to say that, but yeah, he certainly participated in it, no doubt. Yeah. Or he was paying attention to the playbook. We weren't.
I mean, you know, regardless of what you want to say about the guy, he's a master at this. And I think the propaganda that goes against him is hysterical because it's so bad, where you want to try and paint him with these, you know, broad brushes that they do and, you know, try and make him out to be like some monster. No, he's playing geopolitics at a very high level without regard or concern for the consequences other than his own interest, right? That's what you got to expect with somebody at that level. And instead of, you know, name calling and, you know, coming up with this terrible propaganda that they've been putting out, it's not even good, right? I mean, try and meet the master at the master level rather than, you know, the entry level nonsense that our politicians seem to be indulging.
Yeah. So we need to play chess instead of checkers, write the ABCs down on the piece of paper.
Yeah.
I agree with that statement. The Russians have massive information control, and they've had that for a long time because that's part of the old Soviet playbook.
Yeah.
They control the information space. They sow the disinformation. We're not so great at dealing with that. And we're not so great at disseminating what our own side is facilitating there either. But the real objective here is to say, you know, it's morally wrong. There's no question. It's morally wrong, regardless of the grievance that someone has. But these types of behaviors are how we end up with the next world war.
Yeah, but they also don't happen in a vacuum either. And this is the bit that is obviously missing on our side for any student of history in terms of all the motivations that they assign to this are childish. And this isn't something that happened overnight. This has been building at least for the last 12 years. Right. So
yes.
You know, what did you guys do for 12 years to allow this to happen? Why didn't you try and negotiate, you know, some kind of settlement to address everybody's interests and all this? No, this doesn't even come up because everybody in this country views politics as a zero-sum game. I have to win everything and the other guy has to have nothing.
Correct.
This is not how you negotiate with foreign, you know, empires, whether it's Russia, China, Japan, whoever, right? This is not how nations interact. This is how idiot school children interact. And, you know, no wonder the U.S. is getting its ass handed to it globally on all of its geopolitical maneuverings lately.
You're absolutely right. We can't even discuss things with ourselves. So how are we going to be unified in a way to discuss things with foreign entities? And then knowing that, it's a lot easier for them to take advantage of our current disposition, right? Especially if you're willing to do so. And most people will be willing to do so for their own gain.
Well, you know, this is what we talked about in one of the previous episodes, right? This is the 20th century empires trying to reposition for the 21st century. And they're not learning the lesson of the 19th century empires, right? Austria-Hungary thought that they were going to come out of World War I as a victor. And what happened? They don't exist anymore, right? You know, France and Britain thought that they were going to expand their colonial holdings. And what happened? They lost them all. So all of these repositionings have unintended consequences. And for anybody in power to assume they're going to be different, you know, hubris is the recurring theme for a lot of our discussions.
It is. It is. And so there's something to be learned from that. There's a common pattern here, right?
Will the you know, tragic hero suffering from hubris realize that he's suffering from hubris? I haven't seen that play yet.
Let's try to write that one then. Yeah. So, well, and that's why I want to have these conversations. That's why specifically why I want to talk about these things now, right? It's right, like, right. I know there's a way. There's absolutely a way. So if we know certain things are wrong, that they are against the general good nature of the human condition, mm-hmm. perhaps that educating our children in an effective manner is good, not just for the child, but also for our entire social structure.
This is why I think, whether we like it or not, we keep on coming back to the same subject, right?
Yeah.
Because this is the root of it all, where if you have an uninformed generation, they are easily manipulated by those who, you know, wish to do them ill. And I think that level of information and sophistication has greatly degenerated over the last 30 years.
Absolutely has. So one thing that had popped in my head as we discussed this previously was I would say that this generation has been over-nurtured.
Yeah, I agree completely.
And now we suffer the consequences of that collectively.
Yeah. I think that's a big point that, you know, maybe we explore going forward a little bit. An overused word now is trauma. All right. For me, trauma has a very specific connotation, and it isn't, you know, I was picked last in gym class for the kickball team, right? You know, that's an annoyance. That's not a trauma, right? And for people to equate trivial bumps in the road growing up with significant trauma to justify whatever terrible behavior they have, that's ridiculous, right?
They're missing the point, and the point is that you can take those moments and you can confront the pain and you can confront the problems
and build.
And after some degree of cognitive dissonance and paying attention and learning, perhaps you might come out of it a more well-rounded individual.
Yeah.
Meaning that will no longer bother you because you now understand why or how people will do the things that people do with regard to how you view the world. So it's your view of the world that needs to change, not the world.
But one of our recurring themes, know thyself, the first rule of you know, human civilization. This is what is not being passed on to the future generations. You know, instead, we want to coddle them and, you know, say, oh, you know, my poor little snowflake was traumatized by the kickball team instead of, you know. Yeah, it sucks. That's life. You know, pick yourself up and go find something else.
Right. It's not likely that you'll be terrible at everything you try, unless you're actively trying to be terrible or you're just, you know, an apathetic mess.
Yeah.
But
everybody's good at something.
Yeah. You just hit on it too. One of the recurring themes for me in reflection and the thoughts that I've been having and as I pursued and been writing on many different subjects is the fact that I don't believe that anyone can actually consciously choose anything important until they know themselves And how do you know yourself?
Yeah.
You have to disassociate yourself from a group identity or a way of being, or even like, why are there rebellious people? It's like, I'm rebelling against the culture, man. The culture is oppressing me, right? Well, it's like, okay. Again, there might be some areas of it that need fixing.
Yeah.
And that's great. You've helped to identify those. Now shut up and do something about it. You know, there are more constructive ways that we can do that. And look, I'm probably one of the more rebellious people in the history of at least the people that I know. But I try to do so in a manner that's constructive. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I'll question anything and anything that's worth questioning, I suppose, but it's about finding the fundamental, that common thread, if you will.
Yeah.
And instead of, it's like, okay, yeah, you have a grievance. Great. Okay. You have a grievance.
Do something about it.
What are we going to do about it? So like, I was thinking about this the other day, like why generationally do we have all kinds of heavy metal kicking around like for the past 40 years? Like, that's a response to something.
Right.
Like, that wasn't coming out in the 16 or 1700s. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I love me some heavy metal. Don't get me wrong. So it's like, okay, why? Like, why, you know? So what is that? It's a response to something.
Yeah.
You know? And all these art forms in our culture are responses to something. They're trying, I think when done well, they're trying to bridge the gap between the known and the unknown and what we can see and what we perceive, you know?
Yeah.
It's something like that.
Well, you know, now the funny thing is, you know, I think those are all functions of the 20th century, right?
Yeah.
What happens in the 21st century, where everything's been homogenized, corporatized, and compromised? And do you have any legitimate rebellious art form anymore, rather than posers? And, you know, you can say the same thing about music or art or whatever. Is anybody really trying to do anything new anymore? Or are they just rehashing to make sure that they can be or earn a living as a content creator of some kind?
Yeah. So you do see a lot of copies, right? Yeah. We do see a lot of past works just being redone.
Well, it's more than that. Like, so I'm convinced a good chunk of Spotify is AI generated already, because the music is identical to the point where I'm listening to something and I can say, yep, here's a key change coming in 4 beats. They'll do the verse for, you know, 2 measures, then they'll go to the pre-chorus, chorus, a verse. They might put in a solo to, you know, mix things up, and then the song ends. And right. It's almost to the point where I think I could program the algorithm to do it.
Yeah, it's predictable. So it's like they found what works, and it captures the attention, back to the attention of enough listeners that will make them some money, and here we are, right? So, you know, regardless if it's AI generated or if it's just a pattern that everybody's picked up onto that still works, you know?
But the point is, it's homogenized, yes. And, you know, corporatized by it all, because this is what's standard, right? Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, maybe one of the last great bands, although they kind of slacked off over the years, has been Tool, okay?
Yeah.
So when they came out, they definitely were something different for a long time. And, you know, are you ever going to have somebody like that come out again? I don't think so. And certainly not reach that level of success. Pink Floyd, you know, previous generation, same thing. You're never going to have bands like that anymore, because they broke the mold, and that's what made them great. And this is what people tend to ignore in terms of all art. It isn't, you know, version 219 of the same thing that people like. It's the first originator that the people like, because it was different and it spoke to somebody at some level, and it forced a reevaluation of the current status quo, right?
Absolutely. Nirvana
is another example. Not a big fan, but you can't dispute their impact on, you know, the music scene of the last 20 years.
Yeah, they basically were the band that brought the Northwestern Seattle area, United States, grunge scene to the mainstream.
Right.
Right. And I've always appreciated Alice in Chains over Nirvana, for sure.
But me too.
And teach their own. It's interesting how art actually plays a role in this, because when we think about it, it's not like it's like the pioneers found it and they were able to communicate that to us through music and in these various forms. And like for me, like why is classical music still very prominent and what I've always enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And, but not all of it, you know, like I love minor keyed music.
Yeah.
Right. Why? It's very emotionally powerful. That's why, you know, like the more I've reflected on that over the years, like that's the one thing that stands out to me. And it's always been that way. I'll leave you with this. So I've asked like hundreds of people this question, and I want to get your take on it. So,
sure.
And I want to get our listeners' take on it too. So to Peter first and to all of our listeners, if you could change one thing about the world in a purely hypothetical scenario, meaning you have the power to enact globally one change, no matter what it is, what would you change?
That's interesting. I don't know if I could limit it to just one. What I think I would change would be the absolute encroachment of personal liberties by the corporate mindset. In my life, that's been probably the biggest change that I've seen, where everything revolves around the institution, not just corporate in terms of business, but in terms of schooling, structured recreation, you know, structured interactions. No, it's dehumanizing, right? What I've seen the change that I don't like is just the ability to go out, sit around, socialize, have fun. Nothing profound, just relaxing, you know, at somebody's house at a cookout. I mean, yeah, okay, everybody still does that, whatever. But sure. I mean, you don't see like people that I, you know, would see growing up of like sidewalk cafes that were around the south end of Boston, where, you know, you'd go in, have a relatively affordable meal, then you'd hang out front, well, smoking at the time. So, okay, that's good. Nobody smokes like that anymore. But people would, you know, sit on the stoops, smoking, having, you know, coffee, whatever, and then just have unstructured interactions. The kids would play, you know, without worrying about having a established, formalized play date at a field, you know, to do team activities for 3.6 hours and all that. No, everything's regimented with this institutional mindset. I would change that and have people go back to being much more interactive on a one-on-one basis.
I like that a lot. Thank you for sharing. It makes me think back to when I've watched certain tribes in Africa, for example. How are they interacting? It's not one for one. It's like one for all or all for all.
Yeah.
Yeah. The mindset.
Well, that's changing, dude, right? They got cell phones now too, right?
Some of them do. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, just side note, I saw this one thing with, I think it's Kenya, where they have the group of people, and I forget the tribe name, where they still live, you know, basically itinerant cattle herder lifestyle, right?
Okay.
The Maasai. That's what I'm thinking of, right? The Maasai. And, you know, they still do things the way that they've always done. Dude, they got cell phones. So, I mean, you know, when the Maasai warriors have cell phones, we have hit peak weird in my mind because, you know, I just can't process that. That's too much for me.
It is a interesting juxtaposition of states. If I think about the cultural kind of that overly rigid encroachment of the personal liberty, and the corporate mindset is kind of an issue to me. The corporations are more of like it's more tribalistic in nature, right?
Yeah,
I'd written about this years ago when I was on a sales call for a company that's unnamed. The idea came in my head, but so. Corporations are tribal, and we're members of those tribes, you know, but we're free to move between them essentially. And it has its perks, but it has its limitations. And when we're overly, when anything that's overly rigid and structured has the tendency to ossify and become aged and like decay. And that's, again, kind of back to the whole, my whole thesis of the root of our problems is basically that. So,
yeah,
you know, if we look at that, it's like, well, how do we make that better? Well, you get back to the human to human connection. That's how you make it better. What was different in the 50s and 60s? Even when there were no cell phones, but even in the 90s, like my grandfather had a cell phone. He was responsible for running a factory with like 3,000 or 4,000 people in it.
Right.
And you know what he did every day? And this was his mindset, and this is how he views the world. And I'm not too dissimilar, fortunately, in this way. But he would go to work like an hour early every day. Mm-hmm. So if he had to be at work at 6 for all of his production meetings and stuff that were going to happen at 6:30, he went in at 5 and he just walked around the factory and said hello to the night shift that was about to leave and asked them how they're doing and catch up with people. You know, but that was the human to human connection.
Yeah. Old school.
Oh yeah. It is old school, but we lose that.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something that after the conversations that you and I've had over the past few weeks, I think that is lacking. The human to human connection is lacking. Right.
It's the old school is the best school. Right. And it's exactly that. You know, your grandfather was not atypical in how he approached it. I knew a lot of people, different professions, different walks of life, that would do something similar, right? And I mean, you know, it's like the coffee break that used to be the institution in every, you know, part of America at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Everybody had the afternoon coffee break before they wrapped up for the day and went home or went out or whatever it was going to be. Right.
Right.
It's those little bits that are gone, I think, are negatively impacting us.
I think we're negatively impacted on that because we're trying to squeeze like pennies out of the dollars.
Yeah. Completely, you know? True. Completely.
And I think that's the wrong mindset for building a reliable and meaningful work culture. And it's the wrong mindset for getting people to go above and beyond for you.
Yeah.
And it's the wrong mindset for allowing people to have their personal liberty and integrity justified within a corporate environment, you know? Yeah. And we don't need the corporate structure in everything that we do. Right. It serves a purpose for something, but not everything. And I believe that's the key difference.
Yeah. Yeah. It has become the edifice, not the foundations of the edifice. And I think that it's definitely post 1990-ish, 92, somewhere in there.
I agree. Yeah. Certainly. Yeah. And I think there were a lot of changes that happened in the early 90s. You and I were talking about that, I think off air, like the erosion of pensions, and elimination of retirement benefits and all kinds of stuff.
Again, chipping away at the social compact that existed.
And, right.
You know, we're left with the aftermath of that where there is no social compact. We're all islands in a sea of chaos.
Correct. And that's not so great.
No.
When we... No. Kind of have to work together.
Yeah.
You know? And not only do we have to, I think the majority of us want to. I think it's kind of built into us, honestly.
Man is a social creature. And that fundamental nature has been, chipped away at over the last, you know, 20 plus years.
Yeah. I think the last 3 or 4 made it a little bit worse.
Made it a lot worse. The pandemic absolutely widened the cracks that had been building for a long time. And I think people just really starting to come out of the coma and to realize how much damage it did to us as a society globally, not just America.
Yeah, we're going to be writing about this for decades. And decades, hopefully, yeah. hopefully we won't miss the mark when this happens again.
Yeah.
It's so interesting to me. I think there's a lot to like. There's so much for us to learn by paying attention to what's going on around us. There's so much to learn from paying attention to what's happened historically. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it comes down to identifying those tendencies and the root causes of the situations that we're in, and the fact that there are malevolent forces in the world, that there are issues that we need to confront, that there are things that as individuals we can do daily that will help put the pieces of this back together again. And I think that's the message that I want to keep working through.
Yeah.
I believe this is important.
I think it's critical. Is the fate of the Republic hanging on it? I don't know. Quality of life definitely does. So I think these kinds of discussions are critical.
I agree. So I'll pose the same question to all the listeners. And if you guys have, or girls, you all have thoughts that you'd like to share, please share them with us. And I'm more than happy to discuss these on the show in an open format as we dissect the ideas and thoughts. So if you could change one thing about the world, any one thing about the world, any way, shape, or form, you have the power to change one thing, what would you change? Write to us, hit me on Twitter, LinkedIn, and anywhere you prefer. Thank you for joining us today and listening, and I look forward to hearing the feedback to the show and your thoughts on how we might leave the world a better place than we found it. Peter, thank you so much.
Thank you, Daniel. Until next time.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode. Subscribe now to be notified of future episodes and check out our website at theallunknowing.com.